I'm leaving Thursday for Hawaii, as most of you have heard, for a 3 weeks rest. I've spent all this time not feeling well, and now I'm going to rest when I'm not feeling well. And I will be back a couple of weeks, the first part of March, and then I will be gone again for at least 2 months. Many of you will wonder, perhaps, how one who is God-realized does not have the power to lift themselves above physical ailments. But one does not do anything for themselves when they are totally surrendered to God. He is the sole doer that resides in the temple. And whatever he chooses to do with the temple is his will and for his perfect plan and purpose. The suffering that I've just gone through is very, very great, and the weakness has been indescribable. The pain has been indescribable. It was almost as bad as the crucifixion that I went through in 1958. But this time I was fully conscious, but at one time I was just suspended between life and death, as it were, and it didn't seem to make much difference which way I went. That's how ill I have been. Many have questioned whether or not I was ill, whether I was playing games, not many perhaps, but a few. But indeed I was not. So I asked God one day, why all of this? And so he told me that for every new plane of consciousness which opens up in the universal sense, that which you paid in realizing your oneness with him within your own body temple must also be paid in a greater sense. And so in all the travels with the things that God has planned for me, if they materialize, as he has shown me, there will be many new people coming, as I told you before, that when you attain the state of oneness with God or an heir with Christ, then you too become the ransom for many. And you have to pay within your own being a certain price in the human sense in suffering for those who come to you. And this, as I have explained to you before, is because you must pay that for them in order that there be a vacant space so that you can put within it the truth of God. If disciples would only realize how great is the love of the Master, the Guru, for the disciple, they would do a complete turnabout face and do the things, give up the things which are causing them difficulty, and really reach out for that light, that inner realm, that kingdom within, which alone will take them above all earthly things into planes that they never even dreamed of, bliss that they never experienced. Do you think that because I have suffered, because I have been ill, that I do not feel the eternal bliss of God within myself? Never for one moment is it absent. When I come down in the human state of consciousness, then I relate to everything in duality. But when I go up within the heaven of my own being, I am filled with the ecstasy and the bliss of his presence. And without having paid that great price which I paid, which, as I've told you many times, you will not have to pay so great a price, because I'm doing it, as he told me, for the many, whereas you will do it for yourselves. Still, it is worth every little bit of it, every bit, and I am never without him. It was a tremendous price to pay, as I have told you before, for realizing that I am not different, and yet I am totally different. That I still occupy a human body, that I still use my five senses, that I still dress and have the same habit forms as I had before, but that the spirit within has taken over completely, and there is no longer the same individual. That one is dead. But in order to find out that I was, and I am, and I always will be, the same, I had to go through these experiences to realize what in truth I am in God, And each and every one of you will have to do the same thing. But in order to do that, you have to work at it. You really have to surrender yourself and everything you have to God. You have to put Him first. Your first engagement must be with Him and Him alone. Make Him the most important one in your life. Now, if God makes it possible, I plan to give Kriya the last service that we will have in June. But I am going to tell you honestly that only those who attend regularly while I am gone will be given this Kriya. And I use this as the basis for my statement that in Master's autobiography, Babaji gave Lahari Mahasya permission to give Kriya freely to all sincere seeking souls. And so, in my opinion, and the way God is directing me, unless that sincerity is shown by a devotee, by doing as the guru asks, the spiritual teacher whom they profess to love and follow, then that one is not sincere. They do not want God realization, and they are having their first engagement with the world, with their own desires, their own prejudices, and not with God. So I think that this is a perfectly clear line of demarcation. I am not forcing you to come to church, because as I have told you many, many times, I never interfere with your free will. But even as you have your free will to come or not to come, so have I also my free will to give this sacred initiation or not to give it, as God directs me. So those who are true seekers on the path will certainly come, because those who are continuing on in my absence are wonderful souls. I have listened to the tapes which they have made, and I have learned great wisdom from them, because until the last thought we think, the last act that we are able to put forth, the last breath we draw, we can learn from God in somebody else. And unless we have that humility within ourselves to come and add the presence of God within ourselves to that of the others who have gathered before Him, and to help these who are striving so desperately to serve with all of the love and the sincerity of their hearts, we have not yet put our feet upon the first rung of the ladder of God realization. I say that in all truth and sincerity, because it is so. We get prejudices. I have told you time and time again, you do not come here to worship me. You come here to worship God, who is to be found within yourself and who is equally present everywhere, in every atom of space, in every form which dwells in this earth. This whole universe is He. Let he who would be greatest among you, let that one be the servant of all. So if someone thinks that I am greater than God in someone else, then let him disabuse himself. Because that same God is great in each and every one of you. You have but to put it forth, bring it forth into manifestation. And at this point, I would like to request also that when people come to services, if they get here on time, 11 o'clock on Sunday mornings and 8 o'clock on Wednesday evenings, because when you keep coming in and the meditation is going on, it is disrupted, and this is not fair to God, to yourself, or to any of those who are present and trying to worship Him. Now, certainly, we make every effort to get to a job on time. Should we do less for God, without whom it would not be possible for us to live, nor breathe, nor have our beings, to do a job at all? I don't think so. I think that He is the most important. And if people will only make the effort, they can make it. 10 minutes a little bit earlier in getting up, a little bit faster in your movements, just as though you had to get to that job on time, otherwise you would lose your job. Because in truth, every step that you take backwards is a crime against yourself, not anyone else, but against yourself. And it is a definite retardation of your own progress on this path to spirituality. I want to thank all of you for your lovely Christmas cards, for the lovely gifts which you gave me. I was not able to do anything of that nature this year to speak of. I did what I could, but it was very little. But I want you to know that even though I haven't had the strength or the energy to write and thank each and every one of you, how very much I appreciate your thoughts and your love for me. And this expression of love which you have here on the altar, all these beautiful flowers, they're perfectly wonderful. This is the way we should serve God in each other, always thinking not of ourselves, of our little selves, but only how may I serve Him. It is so wonderful, it is so beautiful. And the more you give, the more you receive. And the farther you go, the more you know that all of the earthly things are totally unimportant, that they are but the expression of that God, that infinite indwelling presence which is within each of us. And as God moves in our consciousness and in our hearts and directs us to give these things the utter expression of that which is within, the love, the great love of God, then your own love grows, your own love spreads, and your own riches come. I receive letters from people sometimes asking me how they may increase their income, what they may do. And again, I tell you, there is but one answer: to seek God and the kingdom of heaven first, and then all of these other things will be added unto you. We get ourselves into terrible spots, financially and otherwise, sometimes because of our own wrong actions, our own lack of thought and of balance. And so a price must be paid. But if we will go within and ask for God's direction, ask Him what it is His will that we should do instead of running in all directions, asking everybody else, of trying to seek Him first, of finding our oneness with Him, then indeed that promise comes forth. All other things are added unto you. So from the very depths of the sincerity of your soul, whatever your problem may be, if you will seek Him first as the Christ enjoined, then all of your troubles will be borne by Him, and He will lift you up into His arms of everlasting bliss. And He will take care of all of your problems. He will fill you with His light, with His love, with His wisdom, with His power. But that has to come first. There is no other answer in the earthly sense. Try as you will. But as you try, then He will open the way for you. Not all is lost, believe me. But it is only when you find that inner light, when you seek that inner sanctuary, that you really find the answer to all of your needs, of all of your wants, of all of your dreams. Now, I have here another gospel from Keith, according to Keith. He sings in a Catholic church every Sunday, and so one morning he left one of these gospels, according to Keith, on the table purposefully, so that one of the priests could see it. So the priest came along and looked at it and read it and grunted. He's doing, this is a great man of God. He's constantly seeking to further God's work, so he's given the autobiography to many and right within the Catholic Church and wherever he goes, because he sings at every church and he's working every minute for God. But I think these things are wonderful. He's going to write a book, and I have suggested that he entitle it Visions of the Christ by a Disciple, anonymous. And I think that in that case it might be accepted. Anyway, this is the gospel. A man from the crowd asked Jesus, "Master, speak to us of limitation." And Jesus answered, "How canst thou ask the Son of God to speak to thee of that which he hath long ago forgotten? In that eternal moment when he remembered God. When thou askest me to speak of limitation, thou askest me to describe the garment thou wearest about thy body. That thou canst see for thyself. Behold, I have come into this world to make known the universe that thou art, and not to tell thee the color of the robe thou wearest. For I would not fill thy mind with knowledge of that which already overcrowdeth it, and causeth thy vision of God to be darkened. O my beloved ones, wouldst thou ask God to enlighten thee with his knowledge of sin, when he is perfect and hath created all things in his own image? Then ask not me, for it is I who ask thee, when wilt thou understand that when thou seest sin, thy mind is sin. And when thou seest hatred, it is the hatred which thy ignorance has chosen to view. All that thou seest, thou art. Therefore, if thou askest to know limitation, thou askest me to prepare a cloud to further darken thy mind. For limitation does not exist, only ignorance of God. Thus saying, Jesus became quiet, and with all those about him were caused to reflect within. And how appropriate that seems to be with what God just spoke through me. There is no limitation except that which you impose upon yourself. Through your own, shall we say, laziness, your own lack of desire to give God everything you are, in order that you might find your real self. And when you do that, you will find that in truth you are He, because there is no one in this whole world but God alone. He created everything there was, and nothing was created except by Him. So where is He not? So even that which seems evil eventually turns into good, because it is that alone which brings suffering upon humanity, which in turn, this suffering, makes him turn his face to God and seek himself. This is God's play, his Leela. And it is a wonderful thing when you stop to think about it, that God goes out from himself, this one power, this same power preserves itself, and this same power returns to itself. But while it is going out away from itself and then returning to itself, it seemingly, and actually does in the world of duality, oppose itself. And yet it is all God living his life, going out from himself, sustaining himself, and returning into himself. And when you see everything in the universe is that, and no place that you look can you see anything but God, how wonderful, how beautiful your life becomes. It is a perfect miracle that happens within yourself. You feel so different. You feel filled with the light and the bliss and the love of God. You have no hatred for anyone. You have love for everyone. Everything that you have is given unto others, because you know that as you give, so shall you receive. And the more that you give, God will open his coffers of abundance. He will open wide the doors and pour upon you his blessings in every way, from every direction. I know that this is true, because he proves it to me every moment of my life. I live only on his bounty, having nothing of my own. And yet how beautifully, how wonderfully, how bountifully he takes care of me. I am the living proof of that which I ask you to do. I ask you to do it because I know it works. If I had not been the example, if I were not the example, I would have no right to ask you. If I had not proven it to myself, I could not say to you, do this, and do it with full conscience. But I have, because I know. I seem to be giving a sermon before I get to a sermon this morning. I'd like to read to you one of Papa's little gems. It's entitled, Man's Supreme Quest. Man, pardon me, I'm sorry, I'm having trouble with my throat, but I am as usual. It comes from weakness, I'm told. Man's supreme quest lies in his researches into the realm of the soul, spirit, and God. Deeper he dives into the abyss of truth, the more wonderful grows his experience. He finds worlds are involved in worlds, and as he progresses inward, subtler and subtler are the planes of existence he meets. As he passes through them, he beholds supernatural visions of divine forms, hears the sweetest strains of celestial music, senses the intoxicating fragrance of heavenly aroma, is dazzled with the flashes of immortal radiance, experiences an unutterable rapture of pure bliss, and at last, reaching the utmost confines of the soul in the inner worlds, plunges into the infinite expanse of ecstatic silence and immutable peace, wherein everything is not, wherefrom everything emanates. Further journey ceases here, because now the traveler and the destination have resolved into one, as the river merges into the ocean. The transcendent experience makes the soul realize not merely an inner unity of all life and existence, but also the absolute oneness of all visible and invisible worlds of manifestation. Now he feels both his physical and psychical being in all its aspects is utterly divine, as also the vast phenomena of nature before him. The ecstasy and light of the divine fill every pore of his body, and every atom of his physical frame responds to the thrills of delight originating from his immortal spirit, which is now one with the cosmic soul and the great basic ultimate Godhead, who is all inclusive and all transcendent. Love now blossoms in his heart like a full-blown flower. The world is the playground of his liberated spirit. His bliss and freedom passeth all description. Childlike innocence pervades his entire being. Divine splendor illumines his face. He rolls in ineffable ecstasy. He knows he is immortal. Our Bible reading today is from St. John chapter 12, beginning with verse 20. And there were certain Greeks among them that came up to worship at the feast. The same came therefore to Philip, which was of Bethsaida of Galilee, and desired him, saying, Sir, we would see Jesus. Philip cometh and telleth Andrew. And again Andrew and Philip telleth Jesus. And Jesus answered them, saying, The hour is come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. He that loveth his life shall lose it, and he that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal. If any man serve me, let him follow me, and where I am, there shall also my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor. Now is my soul troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But for this cause came I unto this hour. Father, glorify thy name. Then came there a voice from heaven, saying, I have both glorified it and will glorify it again. The people, therefore, that stood by and heard it, said that it thundered. Others said, an angel spake to him. Jesus answered and said, This voice came not because of me, but for your sakes. Now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out. And I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me. This he said, signifying what death he should die. The people answered him, We have heard out of the law that Christ abideth forever. And how sayest thou, the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man? Then Jesus said unto them, Yet a little while is the light with you. Walk while ye have that light, lest darkness come upon you. For he that walketh in darkness knoweth not whither he goeth. While ye have light, believe in the light, that ye may be the children of light. These things spake Jesus, and departed, and did hide himself from them. I'm going to tell you a story today about... This is entitled The Awakening. And it tells the story that eons ago, when the world was very young, that God the Father and God the Mother sent their youngest son to the planet Earth, that dark, mysterious planet, in order that he might have the experiences necessary to find the great gem that was hidden within the earth. And the Queen Mother made her son a light robe. And in that robe she wove the names of the king and the queen. And she made this robe of radiant material with these secret names woven into it, so that the son might never forget that indeed he was the son and heir of the Divine Mother and Father of the universe. The son was thrilled to be going away, as all youngsters are whenever they undertake a journey. The king and queen warned him of the dangers to be experienced, that he would find much darkness, many things that would try to keep him from finding this jewel. Many things would happen that would try to destroy his light, but that he must remember this light. He must keep with him his robe to light the way for himself. So he descended into this earth. And he had heard about the wild animals, the dragons, that sometimes kept souls from entering, but he was not afraid, because with all of the confidence of youth, he set forth his feet, knowing that he would certainly be successful at the end of his journey. You see, he was depending on himself for this. And so it came to pass that the spirits of the earth heard of the coming of this radiant son of the king and the queen. And they became quite disturbed about it. And they drew all of their workers together, and they had a conference. And they said, "Now it is up to us to see that he does not get this jewel away from us. Because if he takes it away, we will lose our power over the kingdom of the world. So we must do everything within our power to stop him. All of us must work together." So someone suggested that they build a house for him to live in, and that they not have any opening in the roof of the house, that they put the windows in other places in the house so that he could only look outward and not upward and remember the place where he had come from. And so this was done. This house was made, and the son of God came to dwell within it. At first he remembered the radiant light, the realm of great glory from where he had come. But gradually, these people, taking him to their bosom, ensnared him with all of the things they offered to him, with their goodwill, their good fellowship. They offered him things to drink. They offered him made from the vine and the wheat that grows in the earth, the grains. They offered him temptation in the form of sex. They offered him every single evil which would finally take his light away from him. And he succumbed to all of it. And he found himself in total darkness. And so they stood and laughed at him and said, "O son of light, where now is the great light that you brought with you? Where is the gem that you search for? You are not going to be able to find it because you are in total darkness. Your light has disappeared. We have at last taken it away from you." And the Son of God, who had become the Son of Man, mourned within himself and felt terrible because this had happened to him. And he lifted his eyes to the heaven and he prayed, although he knew not to whom, nor in a sense what he was praying for. But he knew that he needed light. So he prayed for this light to come. He prayed for it with all of his heart and soul in his agony, because he knew that he was in utter misery and darkness. And finally, an angel of light, an emissary from the king, happened by and heard his pitiful pleading. And he stopped and he said, "O son of light, what has happened to you? You have lost the great radiance which you have. You are now wearing a soiled and broken garment. Where is the gem that you came to search for?" And the Son of God, who had become the Son of Man, said, "I have lost this garment. I cannot find my light any place. Can you help me?" He said, "Well, the light is still there. It is still waiting for you to find it, as is the gem of great price. But there is much to be done. Now you have been wasting your life essence, outpouring it in the lust of the flesh, in sex. It has taken away all of your power, all of your strength. So you must learn, instead of letting this river flow outward from your being, to withhold it within yourself, and to turn back that flood, and to redirect its course, so that it will once more flow into the light of God, so that you will be able to find this great light which you once had. This is my first instruction to you." So the Son of Man agreed to do this. And so he started practicing continency. And he kept and retained this vital life force within his body. And the more he did this, the more the power of God within him grew. And he was able to feel different, to feel at least right with himself, and that he had put his feet upon the path of God. And so the messenger came again, and he said, "I have done as you have asked me. What else shall I do now?" And so the man said, "The second thing is that you must cleanse your body." He said, "Just as all of the windows in your house have become dirty and soiled so that you cannot see through them, so has your whole body, your whole being. So you must cleanse your body inwardly and outwardly. You must put into it only the foods which are good for it, because the temple of God cannot express itself in all of its purity and wonder when it has garbage put into it. So this you must do." So again, the Son of Man made the effort to do this. And he strove with all of his being to do this. And then he said, "You must give up this poisonous weed. You must give up this habit of drinking from the vine, the fruit from the vine and the grains. Because in truth, this soils every part of your body. It poisons it. It clogs all of the pores. It helps to furnish all of the dirt which is on the windows of your soul. And you cannot go to God without a clean temple." So again, the man went to work, and he overcame these bad habits. And he said, "Now I am purified. I have done all of the things which you have asked me to do. I see the light dimly shining." And he said, "Oh no." He said, "I still cannot see your light." He said, "There is another thing that you must do." He said, "You must stay here even though you feel you see the light. And you must work and serve others." So the Son of Man agreed to do this. So forgetting himself, forgetting even his quest for the light, he started to serve God in everyone whom he met. He saw all these poor people who were struggling on the path, burdened down by all of the things that they had done to themselves through the misuse of their own free will. Those that were struggling, who had suffered sufficiently, and were reaching out and crying for help and for the light, even as he had done. And so his heart went out to them with great pity, with great compassion. And he served them selflessly. He served them so long and so well that he forgot all about himself, totally, completely, in his service for others. And finally the angel came to him and he said, "My son, you have fulfilled the last requirement. You have forgotten yourself in service to God." He said, "You are now ready, O Son of Light, to re-enter thy kingdom and see thy father and thy mother once more." So the Son of Man became again the Son of God and entered into the kingdom of light and became one with his divine mother and his father. I think that's a beautiful story. That says so much in it. It's hardly worth even enhancing it or trying to give you anything more about it. But you know, since the beginning of time, man has been searching for this great kingdom within himself, that palace of the king, that great light of his own soul. And unconsciously, every time he's in need, he lifts his eyes to the heavens and automatically prays. He asks for help. He doesn't look down on the ground and say, "Earth, help me." But he lifts his eyes to the heavens and he asks for help because, you see, unconsciously, he remembers that once he was the Son of God, that once he rested in the arms of God, but now he has found himself in total darkness, and he cries out in his pain and his misery. You take the Holy Grail, for instance. It has been the center of mysticism in the Christian churches for centuries. We have all heard of King Arthur and his Knights of the Round Table, and their search for the Holy Grail. This Holy Grail is this perfect gem which is within yourself. And it is always put forth as a chalice. And there is a legend told that this chalice was used at the Last Supper of the Lord, wherein all of his disciples were around him. and that it was this same chalice that caught the blood which dripped from his body when he was crucified upon his own cross, which is his body. This chalice has become something sacred, something which everyone searches for. And King Arthur and his knights kept up this quest for years, searching for this holy chalice, which is called the Grail. The chalice is a beautiful thing, and it is said that Joseph of Arimathea asked to have Jesus' body, had it buried in his own funeral tomb or plot, and that he had the custody of this sacred chalice. And he also had the sword which wounded the Christ. And it is said that the chalice and the sword are inseparable, that one is as dependent on the other as the other is dependent on it, because you cannot have one without the other. Remember that Jesus said, "I come not to bring peace, but a sword." And he said this with full meaning. And it is the two-edged sword which he speaks of. These positive and negative forces which enter our being at the point, right at the base of the skull, the medulla, and furnish the one light in the one body, just as the two electric wires, the positive and the negative, furnish the one light in every bulb that you turn when you turn the switch. It is a beautiful thought, a wonderful thought that this is so. But this sword is necessary. This sword is necessary. And in the midst of this duality is this serpent force, this kundalini, this force which keeps man in the consciousness or unconsciousness of that which he was before, and the consciousness of that which he is dealing with in the worldly sense now. And it keeps him separated from himself. And as this serpent rises in the spine, this subtle serpent in the field, as it says in our scriptures, and finally, when the soul makes a supreme effort, it goes through the little cavity underneath the brain and on top and is coiled around like we see with the god Shiva and the mother Kali. Then that soul has again gotten rid of duality and has attained their oneness with God. But the sword and the chalice go hand in hand forever, because you cannot have one without the other. The sword pierces. It makes us bleed in the human sense, that which makes us suffer, in order that we might become pure vessels in God, that we might contain his holy blood and partake of the wine and the bread which he offered to us, which were his body. It's a beautiful legend. And we are told that this chalice in itself represents three things. The chalice, the upright part, is the inverted bowl which holds the wisdom and the knowledge of God. And the stem is the will which helps us to get there. And the base is man putting his feet firmly in the world, determined that with everything he has, he is going to live a good, a moral life. But it requires more than just morality. It requires an extreme desire to possess that jewel, to seek out that holy grail, to get the wisdom, the bliss, the knowledge that will come if he will seek it. He cannot hope, although he thinks he is self-sufficient, to know all things of himself and by himself, because it is literally impossible. But when you surrender yourself in all the fullness of your love for God, lay your whole life at his feet and say, "Here am I, Lord, take me." And you let him do all things through you and for you. You will find that that light will start to shine. You will start to have experiences which you never dreamed of. You will start to feel uplifted. You will feel this power come within you. It does with me every time I come up here. You have seen me many times, hardly able to speak above a whisper. And yet all of a sudden God takes hold of me, as he has done now again. And everything booms forth. This is not my power, this is his power. He closes my eyes in order that I might not be distracted even by that which is before me, so that he may speak to you from the depths of his being to the depths of your heart, of your consciousness, that he may tell you of his great love for you, that he may entice you to come and seek this secret grail, this secret chalice for yourself. It is many times spoken, this inverted bowl is spoken of. We have it in many, many legends. And it is so because man, you see, as he comes to earth, like the story that I told, has the top of his house closed. He is an inverted bowl. All of the forces going downward into the earth. All of the things is the senses luring him. He is losing his life. And he who shall save his life, that is the human life, shall lose it. It shall result in a state of death. Whereas he who will lose his life for my sake, in other words, if I lose what I think is my life, my human life, for his sake, then I will have life everlasting. What a tremendous promise. One path results in death, in an average human physical death. Now it happens to everyone. But the God realized soul, that one who is liberated, has gathered together all of the atoms, the sparks of God within himself. And he can rise eternal above his need for a body, or he can take a body again at will. My own guru proved this in a most remarkable fashion, because 20 days after his so-called physical death, his body remained in a complete state of preservation. This was a miracle. This was witnessed by the people at the mortuary at Forest Lawn. And they voluntarily gave a notarized statement to that effect. It was printed in the Times magazine. It was printed in great headlines in the Los Angeles papers. Yogi's body defies death. How was this made possible? It was made possible because of the purity of this man. That he had risen above the things of the flesh. That his whole life was dedicated to God. And even his body was in a state of preservation. 20 days after. This is unheard of. And so it was heralded as a great thing. And his teachings are spreading all over the earth as a result of this and of this great book which he wrote. The truth, when it is realized by any individual soul, feeds upon itself and spreads itself until it covers every single thing with light. It is like you start a fire with just a spark, and that spark takes hold and perhaps burns a twig, and the twig in turn takes hold and burns the little larger stick above it, and then finally the log is set fire. And the whole thing is one flaming mass of light. So it is, as you burn that which is earthly, which is human within yourself, and you reach out for the divine. And this will happen. You too will be able to gain this state of immortality. And so many times, you know, the other day I was looking out at, around me as I was outside, and I saw the whole sky just enveloped with this huge mass of smog. And I thought, my God, what has man done to himself? He is living in a total shell of darkness, which he has built around himself. He cannot get free air. He has polluted the waters. He has destroyed every part of that which he reached out for. And he is living on the dregs of that which he once hoped to gain. Why? Because he's followed the things of the senses. Because he is never satisfied, that the more he gets in the way of possessions of everything, the more he wants. He builds and puts his light into those possessions. He locks them up in safes. He locks them behind closed doors. And these are his jewels which he covets. And he has forgotten his search for that one precious gem, that holy grail which is to be found only within himself. This is the invisible church which holds that chalice, which is indeed the grail. And it tells, I remember another part of this legend which I read about Joseph of Arimathea, that when he passed on, the chalice and the spear were handed to a man by the name of Titurus for safekeeping. And he kept them well, but finally he ailed, and he gave them to his son Amfortas. And Ann Fortas was supposed to take care of this. But Ann Fortas went to battle with the king, Klingsor. And Klingsor's servant tempted him. And so he forgot his mission. And he went into total darkness. He became an ailing king. And it is said that only a perfect fool, one pure in heart, could reinstate the king's health, could reach out and touch him with the magic wand and give him that again. And so the whole thing was in danger until one time the son of another queen came along by the name of Percival. And everybody felt that Percival was going to be the savior. And he stood guard over the chalice and the sword. And he thought to himself, what is it that everybody is searching for? What is this light? I must search for it. Certainly there must be some truth to this legend. So he started and he searched and he searched. And he kept on searching. And finally, one day, not having found what he wanted, he thought, what am I searching for? Why do I even bother my mind about searching for this chalice, for this sword, for this, or not for the chalice and the sword, but for this perfect grail? Why do I not just serve God, keep my attention on him fully? And you know, he was mounted on a horse, and he had no more made this resolution to just forget everything, to even forget his search, and just give himself fully to God in service. And he turned around on his horse, and there was the castle that held the Holy Grail. And by surrendering himself and all of his efforts, everything that he wanted to do, he had come to the end of his quest. So he entered the castle, and he became one with that great light. He had in truth found the Holy Chalice, the Holy Grail. This chalice, this Holy Grail which we search for, is within each of us. We must realize that. We are not a religion. We are not a church. We are not an organization. We seek but to do one thing alone, and that is to focus our full attention upon God through Christ, through that infinite, universal Christ, who is the firstborn, as it says in the scriptures, of every creature. And when we can do that, when we can forget all about ourselves, everything in this world, in service to him, in love for him, in devotion for him, in work for him alone, and live a balanced life, not one-sided, not all meditation, not all work, not all play, but each of these things must be taken into consideration. A man has a responsibility to his family. He has a responsibility for the upkeep of his house, for the things that go on. He has a responsibility for supporting them. He has a responsibility to rest. This is for himself. I'm afraid I've neglected that. But anyway, he has these things, and he must divide his time equally among them. But the greatest of all is to keep the remembrance of God, to keep his name upon your lips, no matter what you are doing. Because I don't care whether you're playing, whether you're working, whether you're relaxing, or what you are doing, you can remember God. And you can remember that it is he doing all things through you, and that every act which you do is in service to him. This is constant. It is deep meditation, and it never ceases until your heart becomes one with him, until it becomes lifted up, until your whole being is filled with the infinite light and presence of that one who is divine. And when that day comes, when you find that he is yourself and you are he, it will be the greatest awakening, the greatest birthday of your life, because then you will find out what it means when Christ said, unless you be born again a second time, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. So we are born in the earthly sense, but we must be born in the Spirit of God. So when that day comes, the radiance and the glory of God will pour forth, and you will become a light on a hilltop, a beacon to show all men the way and the truth of God. Now let us pray to him. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
O Heavenly Father,
open my eyes that I may see thy face.
Open my ears that I may hear thy footsteps everywhere.
Open my heart that I may feel the glory of thy love.
O Heavenly Father,
may thy love shine forever.
Upon the sanctuary of my devotion.
May I be able to awaken all hearts with my own.
And bring them to thee.
Show you the radiance and the glory of that which you really are in Him.